Chapter 11. Servant of the Beast. The moon ceased shuddering. The fleet's efforts to strip the weaponry from the surface were concluded, but throughout the interior, space marines fought desperate close battles against hordes of green monsters, protecting Adeptus Mechanicus salvage teams and xenologists while they stripped whole caverns of machinery. The orcs, though contained, did not diminish in number. The woman Haas had been correct. Through a grainy picked image, relayed from the eyes of a servo-skull probe to a portable auger station, Courland, Beaumont, and Thane saw the orcish gate in operation. The skull looked down from a ledge high overhead. The angle was odd, the picture a striated brown monochrome, but the poor quality of the image could not disguise the scale of what they witnessed. The orcs had carved a chamber 4 kilometers across to house it. Bizarre machines crowded the walls, crackling with potent energies. Within the circle of the machines, piles of crates, scrap, lesser machines, and weapons occupied the flat, gravelly floor. Fat cables snaked away through the materiel crowding the chamber, plugging the gate into the machines. The gate itself was made up of 3 metal horns, as tall as Titans, curving up from a crudely made platform suspended some meters above the cavern floor. Steel houses, chains, and ungainly clamps held them in place. They wobbled even so, perturbed by the energies they contained. Constant dancing light jumped at the center. Every few minutes, the light shone brighter, almost whiting out the picked, and yet another mob of thick-shouldered, tusked greenskins stomped out onto the platform, hefting their weapons, eager to fight.
"The moons. They are not simple spacecraft, as we assumed," said Courland. "They are bridgeheads. It is no wonder the planets attacked have been so easily overwhelmed."
"Where have they learned technology of this power?" said Beaumont. "With each encounter, we uncover further disquieting information. Is there no limit to their ingenuity?"
"We have not seen this before," said Thane. "What has changed?"
"Fascinating," said Kant. "Their mastery of the gravitic sciences must be connected with this. There is potential here. It is said the Eldar possess something similar, a subspatial network that enables communication between their scattered worlds."
"Such an ability in the hands of the orcs is an unwelcome proposition," said Courland. "This must be what Kubik was so keen to secure."
"I concur with his desire," said Kant. "The orcs are epidemic. These machines can only make that situation worse. This is surely the reason for the beast's success. We must capture it, study it, then we might counter it."
They watched as another rabble of orcs marched out of the flashing tunnel of light.
"While they keep their tunnel open, we cannot defeat them," said Thane. "Terra will become an eternal battleground. The orcs will replenish their numbers as ours dwindle. The gate must close. The moon must fall."
"It can be done," said Beaumont. "If that sybaritic coward Lansung can best one, then it should be a small matter for us."
"The agreement with Mars was that the moon must be taken," said Kant. "This gate is the greatest prize of all."
"No," said Courland. "The gate must be destroyed."
"We shall see to it," said Beaumont.
Kant agreed, dolefully.
"It saddens me, but I can only concur. Maybe some knowledge might be gleaned from the wreckage."
"I suggest massed Terminator assault," said Beaumont. "Only by meeting them with the first companies and sword brethren of our orders can we hope to prevail. Once we attack the gate, the orcs will be stirred to heights of fury.
We might fight our way there, but escape? Teleportation will be the only viable means of extraction."
"Thane," asked Courland,
"there are multiple plans that would result in the destruction of the gate, but I cannot conceive of another that would not result in an unacceptable toll of gene seed and life. Teleportation through so much mass and shielding as the moon possesses can only be realistically achieved by those in Terminator plate. We would lose many power-armored brothers. Beaumont's suggestion has great merit."
"What is your proposition, High Marshal?" said Courland. "Form a cordon? Fight our way in?"
"From multiple directions," said Beaumont.
He called up a wireframe diagrammatic of the moon, displacing the pict feed from their auger screen. Much of the Ork satellite had been mapped by deep Auspex, but there were large areas shaded in red, lacking detail.
Our chapters hold large parts of the moon. The Ork reinforcements must be using these tunnels here to come to their fellows' aid direct from the gate.
He indicated three straight tunnels, wide as highways, that led from the gate chamber to the surface, where they exited from the apertures of the moon's giant Ork face. Dozens of lesser ways threaded from them, riddling the crust and deeper interior.
We must divert their attention, said Thane. These Orks are strange and apt to use many unusual technologies, but look at them. Projected from the other side of the galaxy, they come out roaring and snorting, hungry for war. Whatever new tricks these beasts have mastered, they remain Orks.
Orks cannot resist a direct challenge, said Beaumont. Provoke them, and we may direct their fury as we might.
Let us send word to the fleet and land our armored vehicles. Deploy them in the tunnels. That is a lure no Ork could resist. They will die before the guns of our tanks, while we attack from the rear.
A task force-wide vox blurt signaled the beginning of the attack. Across the main triple highway into the core, the massed tanks of five chapters advanced. In the subsidiary tunnels to the sides, hundreds of space marines fanned out to stop any Orks who might choose an alternative route around the advancing land raiders, razorbacks, and predators. The moon rumbled with new detonations as vital passageways were brought down, blocked with millions of tons of rock and metal. At the peripheries of the territories held by the chapters, space marines prepared for the moment the Orkish reinforcements would be cut off. Thereafter, they were to drive forward, trapping the remaining greenskins. There would be slaughter, Corland was sure, but the cost in gene-forged blood would be high. The Terminators worked their way into position around the gate as the Orks took the bait, advancing up the main tunnels where they hurled themselves at the advancing space marine tanks. The armor worked its way forward purposefully, slowly, the tunnel resonating with the reports of their weapons and the howling of Orks. Corland fought alongside Thane and his bodyguard of Terminators. Through a labyrinth, they proceeded, slaughtering Orks wherever they found them. The corridors rarely ran straight, and where battle was met, it was a vicious, close-quarters affair. Corland's freshly painted armor was soon a mess of nicks and scratches, the bright yellow stained dark red. His sword was caked from tip to pummel in blood baked black by its power field.
This feels good, grunted Thane, smashing an Ork's head deep into its shoulders with his power maul. On Idolica, we kept them back as long as we could, slaying them with our guns. Tactically proper, but where vengeance is involved, I prefer to see my enemy's face close.
He let out a shout as he smashed another Ork down. Corland cut the hands from his own opponent with a single well-placed blow. The Ork roared its anger and battered at him with bloody wrists. Corland spared a single round from his storm bolter to end it.
Close quarters melee conserves our ammunition, said Thane at the sound of the gun. We're going to need it.
They rounded a corner. The corridor opened up onto the floor of the gate chamber. Thousands of Orks were pouring from the flaring mechanism.
There are so many. It is as Idolica was, said Thane.
So it was on Adamantua also, said Corland. An endless tide. Let us stop it up. Time to announce ourselves.
Thane strode into the chamber, selected a tall, crackling machine for his ire, and smashed its casing with his power maul. Sheet metal caved in, exposing the flashing innards. Another blow arrested its processes explosively. Fire belched from the array of pipes on the top, followed by a greasy cough of smoke.
Destroy the machines! Destroy them all! Roared Thane. Interrupt the power supply, said Corland. Close the gate!
Five more machines died before the Orks noticed their attackers. Piggish, ugly faces turned at the sound of the destruction. Without breaking stride, a portion of the Orks streaming from the gate up the tunnel changed direction and charged at the new threat.
Now is the proper time for the expenditure of ammunition, shouted Thane. First company, fire!
40 of Thane's Terminators formed a bowed line centered on him. while the others fanned out and destroyed the machines. Their guns spoke with one booming voice. Storm bolters on full automatic blazed a streaking hail of fiery darts. Assault cannons spun up to firing speed, spitting out a torrent of bullets. Where bolts met orcish flesh, they penetrated and exploded. Orcs staggered on with horrendous injuries. Many required two or three further shots to down. Where they encountered the furious sweep of the assault cannons, they were cut in half. The orcs stumbled and fell, or were blown backwards in bloody chunks. Stacks of supply crates were shredded. Munitions within them detonated. Shoulder-launched cyclone missiles exploded in tight clusters, tearing red holes in the orc hordes. The enemy tumbled over the corpses of their fellows, piled high by their own momentum, a line of ruined flesh at the edge of the Space Marines' range. Still, they came. All over the cavern, explosions roared upward as other Terminator groups entered the hall and set to work. Courland headed implacably towards the nearest of the gate horns. He smashed down an orc that had made its way through the torrent of fire. An electric fizzling crackled across the chamber as a tall horizontal wheel, covered in bronze balls, came off its mountings. Green lightning jagged out into walls, floor and machinery. Another huge boom and another, gouts of fire, rolled upward. "Company! Change ranks!" yelled Thane. His first line, their ammunition exhausted, stepped back, smoothly changing places with another line that stepped forward, storm bolters already chattering. There was no interruption to the wall of death the Fist's exemplar dealt out. Courland and his entourage were beyond the edge of the firing line, and the orcs came more thickly. They brought them down, smashing their way towards the horn. Courland cut the cables running along the floor. Fires blazed everywhere, tinged with green, choking black smoke billowing from them, moving strangely in the erratic artificial gravity of the gate room. The gate stuttered, its light and its buzzing interrupted. Orcs passing through during this intermission were torn in half.
"Press on! Press on!" roared Courland.
The flow of orcs lessened. The gate blinked off again, longer this time. Courland emptied his magazine into an important-looking machine, blasting it to bits. The gate went out. The orcs roared as one. All around the chamber, they were facing lines of Space Marine Terminators. At measured pace, the Space Marine lines converged, trapping the orcs between them. The Sons of Dawn suffered their losses, but for every champion of humanity that fell, 20 orcs died. The orcs flooding up the tunnel towards the tank line milled about, unsure which enemy to engage. They surged back and forth before finally switching direction and running towards the Terminators. At Thane's position, the guns of the second line clicked empty. No third line existed to replace them. The orcs clambered over their heaped dead and charged into the Space Marine ranks. A cacophony of weapons hitting thick battle plate announced the meeting of orcs and Space Marines, followed by the banging of matter annihilated by disruption fields as the Adeptus Astartes swung their power fists.
"Onward to the gate horn," ordered Courland.
Orcs pulled at his arms, thick green fingers slipping from his gory armor. He shook them off. The horn towered above him. He pulled out the melter bomb maglocked to his thigh, twisted the flask handle, and slapped it into place. Two more Terminators followed, attaching their own bombs. Across the smoking, empty platform, Courland saw Beaumont and Issachar's warriors doing the same, Malphonse himself attaching his bomb to the third horn.
"Charges placed," voxed the Lord of the Iron Knights. "Withdraw," voxed Courland. "Prepare for extraction. Our work here is over for today. Initiate teleport countdown."
On his chronometer, 5 minutes flashed up and began to tick down.
"Terminator groups, withdraw to pre-designated teleport coordinates."
All around the chamber, the Terminators backed away, always facing the enemy. The orcs were greatly reduced in number, but thousands remained, and their fury only grew as their ranks were further thinned. At 3:10 until teleport, the gate flared again. Through the flickering light stepped the largest orc Courland had ever seen. Not even the warlords of the great tribal migrations he had fought against compared with it. It was taller than a Space Marine dreadnought, an axe as big as a rhino's side in its hand. Red eyes glowed with feral intelligence above a row of close-packed teeth as long as sabers. Upon its head was a thick helmet, adorned with a spread of horns as long as power swords. Around it were 30 or so other orcs, smaller than their leader, but every one a terrible warrior in its own right. The giant orc shouted out an incomprehensible stream of Xenos words, and the orcs fighting the space marines began to rally themselves, pulling back into better order, firing their guns at the Terminators.
"What by the Emperor is that thing?" Vox Malfons. "Is it the beast itself?" "Whatever it is a worthy foe," said Beaumont.
The orcs redoubled their attack as their master stepped off the gateway platform. Its monstrous bodyguard swaggered after it, war gear and weaponry, uniform only in their brutality. As they stepped down, more orcs were revealed behind. Some bore banner poles of iron fists clutching spanner icons. All of them wore harnesses and aprons stuffed full of tools, and their weapons were bizarre combinations of heavy axes and wrenches. These ran across the platform, jumping off the sides. They headed for the wrecked machines, dozens of slave assistants rushing after them. The leader beast roared and gesticulated, pointing to the worst damage. Now some of the orcs retreated, forming a cordon, blocking the Terminator's way to the specialists. Behind a line of warriors 20 deep, the mechanicians set to work. The rest of the orcs roared and charged. The two lines of space marines met and smoothly reformed into a circle.
"They are repairing the machines," said Malfons. "Ignore them," said Corland. "They have not seen the melter charges. When they do, they will not have time to disarm them. Teleport in 2 minutes, 20 seconds. We must prevail until then."
Corland swept his power sword across the front rank of orcs, cutting several in two with one swipe. The rest surged on over the toppling bodies of their friends, driven on by the crowd behind and their own insatiable battle lust.
"Hold them back! Hold them back!" roared Corland.
2 minutes to teleport. The circle of space marines shrank. For all the thickness of their armor, they were heavily outnumbered. The great beast lofted its axe and brought it down with a powerful swing to point at Corland. Shouting more orders, it bore down on the last of the Imperial fists with a plodding charge, head down, its bodyguard forming an arrowhead behind it. Corland slew his last opponent and prepared to meet it. Those space marines, still possessing ammunition, opened fire. For a few vital seconds, mass reactives shattered thick armor plates, blew divots of green flesh from massive muscles. Then the orc charge hit home. The orcs towered over the space marine elite and knocked them staggering. Chain axes rose and fell, hacking through reinforced adamantium and ceramite by dint of raw orcish strength. Boxy power claw blades squealed through hardened metal, snipping off heads and limbs. The space marines fought back, smashing the orcs with their power fists, caving in their ribs and crushing their faces into bloody mist. The leader came at Corland, and the Imperial fist had the fight of his life on his hands. 30 seconds to teleport. The orc was twice Corland's height, broader than a battle tank. Corland sidestepped its lowered head, but was caught upon the thing's shoulder and sent stumbling backwards. His armor's gyroscopic stabilization systems protested as they fought to keep him upright. The orc recovered swiftly, swinging its massive axe out and across at Corland's chest height. It hit his plastron, the impact of the blow shaking him inside his armor. The eagle upon his chest was wrecked, the metal detail pressed and smashed into itself as if it had been crafted from soft lead. The orc reared up, raising its axe before Corland could react. The weapon hurtled down fast as a comet. Corland pivoted awkwardly, pushing the mobility of his armor to its limit to raise his sword in an overhead parry. His weapon met the cruel head of the axe with a titanic boom. The axe head exploded into spinning, white-hot shrapnel. The force of the blow was such that Corland was driven to his knee. When he lumbered back upright, he found his own blade was a blackened shard. He had no time to order his armor to disconnect the power feed and discard it. The beast was on him again, its skin studded with the smoking remains of its axe. 20 seconds to teleport. The orc reached down grabbing both of Corlin's arms in its gargantuan fists. It lifted him up, armor and all, pulling his arms apart. Corlin's armor sang a litany of alarms. Red flashed all over his helm display. Metal groaned, and hot pain stabbed into his wrists, elbows, and shoulders as the joints began to part. The cavern filled with golden light as the melter bombs went off in stepped detonations, microfusion devices slagging wide rings to the left gate horn. Sectioned into pieces, the device slid apart, spraying gobbets of molten metal into the orcs around the teleport gate. Then the second fell, and the third, tearing metal shrieking, severed power lines lashing back and forth with frantic energies. The pressure slackened as the leader orc looked back at the ruin of the gate. Suddenly Malphonse was there, great sword blurring through the air. The chapter master moved with an agility in his Terminator armor that Corland had never witnessed before. The orc dropped Corland and kicked at Malphonse, knocking the chapter master backwards, and snatched a fresh axe from its belt. It followed up with a powerful blow at Malphonse. The axe was of simple metal, but the strength of the orc was such that it bit deep into the ceramite cladding of Malphonse's pauldron. The chapter master shouldered the orc aside, weathered a second strike, and swung his blade hard. The weapon cleft the orc's chest armor, slicing deep into muscle. With a howl of fury, the orc backhanded Malphonse before he could attack again. Helm lenses shattered, Malphonse faltered. An instant was all he gave the orc, but the creature grabbed it. The orc stamped down on Malphonse's leg, pinning his foot in place, then it reached forward and clamped its fist around the chapter master's head. As teleport blur smeared his sight, Corland saw the orc rip Malphonse's head free with one mighty wrench. Then he was in the blacklight glare of the teleport chamber, gas gushing all over him from the internal piping, and in his helm a voice announced, "Teleport successful!" The doors opened, and he clumped out. All around the deck, Black Templars emerged from other chambers. In several, dead warriors lay slumped in armor summoned back by the undeniable call of the Abhorrence's machine spirits.
"Beaumont, Thane, Issachar, Cassandra," voxed Corland. "Malphonse is dead."